I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello
and welcome to Jokes with Mark Simmons, the podcast where I chat to another comedian about jokes they can't get to work. Joel's here.
Hey,
he's on the phone.
Hello,
how you doing?
I'm really well, thanks, Mark.
I've been up for ages. What have you been
being? Being productive. I've been, you know, working, doing stuff.
Have you? This morning?
Yeah. Are you in bed?
No, I had to get up.
Yeah.
You made me get
how
up.
How long would you have stayed in bed?
I'll go back to bed, I think, after this.
Listener, just for your information, it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
No, it's not. Sorry, everybody, if you like to listen to this on your way to work or something, because we just didn't get time yesterday, did we, Joel?
We didn't, sadly. I was in the Wirral.
Were you?
Yeah.
What were you doing up there?
Podcast stuff.
Bloody podcast stuff, probably.
Always. It's all I do.
Probably more important podcast stuff.
If it's paid. It was paid.
Well, let's not go into that. Yeah, and I was in Glastonbury on that damn road.
Oh, very nice.
It's lovely, lovely. Didn't get back till late, so soz about that, everybody. But it's worth it. Worth the wait. So, what do we normally do now, Joel?
Comedy news.
I forgot about comedy news. Hashtag Awooga. What's the comedy news? Is this your little section? I don't like how you interrupt. I'm assuming it's because of the phone, but we keep interrupting each other.
Start that again.
Do you want to do you go? Go on, Joel.
Okay.
I don't want comedy. I hope that didn't sound. I was gonna say, I hope that didn't sound like I was being rude. I don't know how
comedy
good
news.
Comedy news. Go on, Joe. It's your section.
I saw Susie Ruffles' show last night at Soho Theatre.
Oh, you didn't tell me you were doing that. How was that?
I know. Fun little surprise.
Is that news?
It was. Pardon?
Is that news? Did you find something out?
Well, not really news, more comedy reviews.
Oh, it's a review. Oh, I hope it's good.
Great show.
Ah, there we go. Good.
Really good bit about pigeons that really
good
made me laugh.
Good bit about pigeons.
It's about time someone took it to the pigeons.
I had a joke about a pigeon that I dropped once. So, I mean, technically I was doing it probably before Susie Ruffle.
Oh, interesting. A bit of
ruffling the feathers.
Beef.
Ruffling some feathers. I was something about racing pigeons. I won.
Good.
I was in an aeroplane or something.
It's good.
It was better than that.
Was it?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. Comedy reviews.
You laugh before the punchline. Because if you race pigeons, you can win without actually physically racing them.
Because
yours beat the other people's. You never raised pigeons, Joel. You've done anything about it, do you? Was Susie's bit about racing pigeons?
It wasn't, no. If you race pigeons, you're a pigeon fancier, aren't you? That's so rubbish.
Today, it's Phil Nicol!
Awooga!
I can't shout too loud because my flatmate, I think, is still in bed.
What? What are you all doing that flat?
Oh, I don't. I'm not in charge of my flatmate. I don't know what she's doing. But I get back late, Joel, so that means I can get up late. That's allowed. I've only had 7 hours sleep. That's not enough, is it?
You went to bed at 3 o'clock in the morning.
But I got up and... What? What time is it now?
At 10:30.
Oh, is it? I thought it was 9:30.
Is it 10:30?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Genuinely thought it was 9:30.
Yeah. Mark, what's happening on the podcast today? Please, I've got to edit
Nickel,
this.
Mate. It's bloody, it's, oh, let's just do it. God. Phil Nickel. Enjoy. Hashtag Awooga. And I write jokes that are, you know, on the edge.
Yeah.
But I'd be interested to know what you think of this. Like, so for me, if I know it's a good joke, I really want to do it, even if it makes people a bit... weird.
Yeah.
But I also want every one of my jokes to smash.
But wait a minute, what makes you feel weird about it? Is that because you think
I want them to laugh at everything.
Yeah.
And some jokes, like, even if it's not offensive in the slightest, but in the setup there's a word that makes them uncomfortable, sometimes they just won't laugh.
Yeah.
Now for me as a professional, I want to get the best response constantly.
Yes.
So I might stop doing a joke that I like,
yes,
because it doesn't get the reaction it need. I need from the audience, even though I think it's a perfectly fine joke.
Yes.
To do.
It's defendable if you take it apart.
Yeah,
it's totally defendable.
But I still want to smash every gig I do. So yeah. I don't want to risk. It's a tough one, I find, with that.
Well, yeah, I mean, the whole stock and trade of Corking the Juice Pigs was to be the guys that give you the dark thrill of laughing at something you're not supposed to.
Yeah.
Oddly, you're allowed to do that in drama or in action movies. You've no problem watching people have their heads cut off by some crazy swords person in the X-Men movies and people bleeding gore. You have no problem with that. But if I make a joke that has the word rape in it, you go completely off the hook. That's not a funny topic. That's not a topic for humor. You know,
but someone's just been decapitated.
And also, I also never go, yep, if that's what you think, then that's not that's your thing.
Yeah.
I personally don't think all topics are topics for comedy, and I realize it's subjective, and I have my own theories on it, but I don't want to offend you, so I apologize, and I will take that back. That's, I think that's the state of the art.
Yeah.
But if I don't mind losing an audience a little bit.
Okay. Yeah,
but you've seen my club show is written to try and just make people laugh hysterically, yes. and I will do anything to do it. I'm not even a purist. I'll jump on people's faces. I'll spit and I'll goober and I swear and I do a lot of dick jokes, and I'm not really like a high art comedian.
Yeah,
although I think I have other stuff that where people
your shows
it's that's a little impenetrable to someone that just wants to come along and have a laugh.
Yeah.
So I'm making them think about my brother's coma or whatever.
Right.
They're both valuable.
So would you say, if you were doing one of your shows, you'd compromise less than if you're doing your stand-up club set, which is designed to make everyone laugh constantly?
I don't know, just a different style, isn't it?
Yeah,
I
mean,
you know, I like exploring ideas, but it's almost like I know what you're saying is we're living in a time, it's an interesting time for comedy, and I'm an older white privileged dude, right? Mm. So I have an opinion on it. I find it hard to venture that opinion because it's easy to take apart, and there's people sitting there, I think, poised to go, yeah, well, wait a minute. Well, and there's so much of that going on that in itself is a problem. But I still know that when I make a joke or I quip to a friend that I think is funny, I think, oh, fuck, you could never get away with that in front of an audience. That line has been pushed. The boundaries, I don't know. I'm trying to use a good, the image would be a tennis court. We're now in the singles court, doubles court.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like. And you have to know as a comedian, it's your job as a professional to know where that line is. If you choose to go over it, you better have chosen to do it on purpose and be able to bring it back or defend it.
Yeah, of course.
So in the case of the Rosie Jones thing, which is people are talking about, I don't think she intended to offend anyone. But that, in fact, she was sort of making like that's kind of a joke that's been made before about teenagers getting fingered.
Yeah.
It's to me, that seems totally in the single.
She's, if I'm right in thinking she's old. She's not like she's underage.
No.
So,
yeah.
So it's not a, actually, it's just.
Yeah. You know, I'd even defend it. Well, you can't, it's, I guess, national television. But even if you are, it's, that's almost like saying you don't think, we're not allowed to think that 14-year-olds get fingered because legally it's not legal.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I mean, you know, let's be honest, they do. And, you know, we've all been 14. And people that weren't in that experience might go, I never did that. But that's probably in the minority of people.
Yeah,
am I right? No.
Yeah,
I'm on thin ice here. But it's like pretending that no 12-year-old has ever got pregnant. It's like, well, they have, and it does happen.
Yeah, yeah.
So why are you not allowed to make a joke about it? You've got to be a good joke. And I didn't think that was a bad joke. I think the reaction of the people around her maybe made it seem worse.
I haven't seen the footage, actually.
Yeah, I think Sarah Pascoe says something like, ooh, I think we should apologize, which is probably correct for Sarah Pascoe to think that. But at the same time, this is a bit of a side follow this, right? Greg Neal and I have he has this wonderful joke he plays on me where it's something you can do, and take this away, right? If you're, it's to get your friend in trouble. So if you, Mark, were saying to Sean, hey, Sean, did you get your haircut? It looks really good. When you compliment the person, I go, oh, 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 oh. And even if you mean it, it makes it look as if you're going, hey, I like your shoes. Oh, because it makes you look like you're making fun of them.
Yeah, yeah,
it's perfect,
yeah.
Right?
Well, that's great.
So it's a good joke, right?
That's
it's
really funny.
Yeah, it's really good. You can only really do it to close friends. Then they immediately go, no, I meant that. And then, more.
All right. Oh, not what you said earlier.
Okay. In their face.
That's funny.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Mm. I'm not a satirist. I'm a humorist or a surrealist or I don't know.
Multi-talented.
Well, yeah, you didn't say that like you believed. You, this is how you said it. You went, multi-talented.
Yeah, we all know you're multi-talented. No, you are. Let's talk about some stuff.
I'm a West End star, mate.
You are a West End star. my flatmate's not in, but she worked at the show and she was singing your praises.
Oh, really? What, she's in the show?
No, she worked. So she is an actor, but she's just qualified actor. So she's working front of house.
Oh, wow. Okay.
In the theatre.
Right.
And then she said she saw the show now because obviously it's a new cast.
Yeah.
She said your role, you were best.
Oh, hey, I'm the best. So, it's funny when people say that because I know I don't think, I honestly, genuinely don't think of things like being the best. Maybe that's, I'm not, I, that competitive streak, it's only like personal competition.
But I
get uncomfortable because I don't think, well, yeah, you thought I was the best. You saw me on a given night doing a certain thing.
Yeah,
and
But I guess it's the same as comedy. It's all subjective.
Yeah.
So if people, if her way you played it is just how she likes, I guess that is the case.
Or just on that particular night, me and the other actor had a bit of something going on, or,
yeah.
You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
But also, this has been my whole existence in comedy is there, we often see people rise to a level of fame, and it's not just me, but actually the community at large goes, wait a minute, how did that happen?
Yeah.
And then as you get older, you realize, well, there's other factors to fame than just how good your jokes are.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And easy, we know loads of great joke writers that the average person out there will never hear from unless they listen to your podcast.
Yeah. But they'll hear their jokes, but just with other people saying them.
Yeah. Or even they'll hear their jokes and not get them.
Yeah.
And not realize what a finely crafted joke it is.
Mm.
You know, and then that's knowing, you know, about how you write jokes or the type of jokes you write is the beauty of writing short form one-liners and two-liners is you have to really, they have to make sense right away.
Yes.
And so they work or they don't. They rise or they fall at the end of that beat. The audience laughs or not. Whereas joke routines that have spiral off and take in all other stuff. Sometimes audiences don't have attention for it, so therefore they get lost they're disinterested.
Mm.
Who knows? That's called the X factor.
Yeah. But also, I guess it's the performance as well. It has to be on point. For it could be a reason why a bit doesn't work if you're more performery.
Yeah.
So it's not just the wording. I guess you have to factor in everything. Like if you're feeling a bit tired one day or like...
My favorite example of that my favorite comedian, having done some of my favorite performance ever, is Phil Kay.
Mm.
Who on a good night, there's not many comedians, Kevin Hart included, that could touch him.
Mm.
But that's not what the two skill sets are going after. One's going after the consistency, so he can play to 10,000 people in a stadium, so it's perfect and word for word and a bit patronizing. And the other one is someone who's just in their own zone.
Yeah.
Phil wants to make you laugh as much as Kevin Hart, and Kevin Hart as much as Phil. Phil's much more capable of not getting the response he is expecting.
I did the first time I gigged with him was two nights in a row in a little gig in Brighton, and he basically did the same set. But, you know, obviously it's not quite the same set.
Yeah.
And the contrast, one show died and the other show I've never seen anyone rip it the same.
Yeah, right.
And I was too inexperienced then to be able to look and try and work out why.
Yeah.
But it could be the audience, it could be initially the first thing he did they didn't like.
Yep.
But I don't know.
Well, the first thing you do is sets up the whole piece. If you come out and your first joke doesn't work, you get three chances, I reckon.
Yeah.
You get like about a minute.
Yeah.
You get three, I mean, depending, you might maybe quicker for you because you do shorter jokes, but yeah, you get like three tries. Mm. Even in the middle, you could be killing. There are times you'd be killing for like, you know, 15 minutes. And you do three things in a row that don't work and they're gone.
Yeah, yeah.
Because audiences are, that's the whole thing is we get them into our system or into our cycle and we have to keep them there.
Yeah.
Or if I have to follow someone who's done like a killer set of one-liners and I go on, I've got to figure out how to manipulate them back into getting them into what I'm going
to
do.
Because I do have the opposite, because sometimes it takes them a while to get into the one-liner zone where they've got to try and think about the joke and try and get it. So that can take a good minute or two.
But I remember, or the other thing is what they're expecting. So I remember, I think I was comparing for you, I was on before you, and I thought, and I said to you, look, I've got my one-liners, which are kind of a change of pace for my show. It kind of works as a joke because they're a change of pace. They're dumb. They're not quite as clever as you. Like they're purposely a bit shit.
I think they're purposely a bit shit. I don't think they're a bit shit.
Well, they're more like I was doing like a style thing.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I think it set it up by doing some to try and get the audience into
thinking,
okay, I'm going to start thinking in short. So if you come on and you do your first joke and they don't get it, they might think it's still part of the setup of the...
Yeah.
And you're thinking, no, that was the joke. And you move on to the next thing and they're going, I don't get what he's talking about.
Yeah, yeah. That's why I always address it if that happens, just so they know.
Yeah.
I just have to spell it out sometimes.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah, yeah. But you do, I was going to say, because you do write little shorter jokes. Well, from the sets I've seen, and I think I know the bit you're talking about, where it's just the similar start that you've got. I don't really want to give the jokes away, but you do the same style of joke, and then there's just another one, and another one, and another one.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like the stab at it, those ones.
Yeah, or you set up like one setup. And then, well, originally I was trying to do this thing where I'd do the one setup, like it's the fuck my wife routine. Mm. And it's one setup. I talk about my wife breaking my heart and me writing a joke to get over it. Can I tell you the joke? Get out of the way and move on. They go, yeah. And I said, why'd the chicken cross the road? To fuck my wife, right? And then, but then, because the way it happened on the one I wrote, it was actually real, which I talk about in my show, is the guy I was saying the joke to, because I was brokenhearted when I said it to a guy. He went, that's hilarious. Knock, knock. And I went, what? Who's there? Went, someone to fuck your wife. And I was like, these two guys walking to a bar and they fuck my wife. And then you start realizing, oh, I can, you know, you can start, once you set up a premise.
Yeah, yeah.
Harry Hill used to do it. He used to set up jokes and have punchlines. So he'd set up like jokes with a punchline. You do a joke with a couple of punchlines. I'd go off and do another joke with a couple of punchlines. You do that like three or four times. Mm. And then at the end of the set, he's just basically doing punchlines one after another. Yeah. And because they're so clear, you're able to go, oh, that's the punchline to the first thing. And it's really clever.
So towards the end of the show, he'd go, and my wife went to the doctor.
Yeah.
Or yeah. Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. He'd start doing. So in taking those, so I can do set up that fuck my wife routine. I can half an hour later. I can say, you know,
horse walks into a bar.
Yeah, horse walks into a bar. And he's like, yeah, we're doing fuck your wife or whatever. The jokes are all any setup. Well, waiter, what's this fly doing in my soup? It's fucking your wife. So,
yeah.
You know,
but I've never been able to do that with those so much with those kind of. I don't know. I feel like that, like your performance will help those as well. Like do you know what I mean? Like. I don't know what I mean by that, but I feel like with my style of my quite slow paced, that they might get a bit. I don't know, because I'm thinking if you're one with the take a stab at knife crime and all those, your energy when you're doing it adds so much to those. I think.
I guess so. They're also predictable. I set up the premise because it's a true premise of there being, and I can't remember. It was like. It's a poster that says, you know, stamp out bullying.
Oh, that was it. Yeah.
Stamp out bullying. And I was like, what? That's got to be it. I know it's a joke. That's such a British thing. Because the person, they know that's a joke. And then that becomes I'm sitting there going, what else is there? And I went home. I lived with Carrie Marks for 10 years. I don't think, was I living with Carrie when we wrote that? But Carrie Marks and I used to sit there at night and we'd get wasted and we'd just come up with a premise like that. And then we would milk it.
Yeah,
we just wring it dry, and keep, and we'd sit there, like sometimes it'd be two of us sitting there for a minute, going, "Oh, I want to get the next one,"
and
to try and make the other person laugh, so that you'd end up with, you know, I did a section in 2002 called "Wrong Jokes," and wrong jokes are different than bad jokes. Wrong jokes are jokes you only say to your friends in a closed space because you know they're wrong, and the reason they're funny is because the person that's with you knows they come from a centered place or that you don't you live the opposite. You don't actually find it funny, and they can get pretty dark. But they're not like bad jokes. Bad jokes are just jokes. Everyone goes, oh God. Those are funny too, but especially when you pitch them as bad jokes, people go, oh. Yeah. And when you're doing a set of one-liners, there's going to be any number of those in there because the way that you have to sculpt one-line set is that you can't have every single joke. If you put all your bankers in a line, some of them, jokes that get an applause break in the wrong place will get nothing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I've spoken about that on the podcast before. I've said it before, but that doesn't matter. When I toured with Sean Walsh, and he'd go out and he'd just go bang, 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 bang. And in my head, I'm like, right, my aim is to have that.
Yeah.
But then it did make me better because I was very ruthless with my stuff. But my style, you can't do that. Like, because I watched the Milton Jones DVD and he'd go, there'd be a little laugh, bigger laugh, bigger laugh, massive laugh, little laugh, bigger laugh. Yeah. And you have to keep doing that. Otherwise, like you say, the jokes that are big laughs, if they're on the roast, they start not getting big laughs.
Not getting big laughs,
and they start going off. And that I learned quite a lot from that.
Yeah.
Because you just got to write to your style, haven't you? You've got to set it out to your own style.
Well, like I think that's just a technical thing about what the audience... how much the audience is willing to accept that you're making it up or you've written it or that you're actually manipulating them. And I think they tune in to the fact that They would rather believe you're just coming up with this on the spur of the moment, though they know. So you know that someone like Jimmy Carr's, those are written gags. But if you do too many of the same ones in a row, the same style in a row. I was watching a comedian the other night who I won't say who it was, but just I really like them. I love them as a comedian. But had a couple of things in a row, like a pullback and reveal in a row. It was like, even me as a comedian, I was going, he's losing because it's doing the same thing.
Yeah.
But then it was for a purpose, and they did the way they did the last one. It was like, that's really clever.
Yeah.
The audience at the same time were feeling the same thing. They're going, come on. Yeah. It's letting us down now.
Yeah.
Even they were going, come on, man.
Yeah.
And then bam. And you can manipulate the audience. But as long as when you're doing a set of one-liners, which I haven't done to the extent that you have, you've got to play with their expectations and you've got to play with the length of the joke.
Yeah.
You've got to play the subject matter. Gary Delaney is, I think, one of my favorites of that, because you never quite know where his joke might land. So you can't predict it. Yeah. Even the ones that he then become, when he says the punchline, you go, that was predictable, but you can't predict it because the one before it wasn't at all what you thought it was going to be there for.
So you wrong foot
you. You wrong foot you constantly, yeah.
Wrong foot you even in the setup, yeah.
And I think even long-form comedians do the same thing.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, but we're talking about short-form jokes.
Have you got any bits?
You're a Mitch Hedberg fan? You must be.
Yeah. I love his stuff.
Talking about not being able to predict from the setup what part of the setup he's going to make fun of, even if it's short, really short setup.
No, he's brilliant. He's also someone that a lot of his stuff I don't think anyone else could do. Like, it's just in his style. He very much owned it, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not good at telling other people's jokes.
No.
Right, you know, when someone goes, I'll do that Mark Simmons joke, and I go, oh fuck, because I don't want to fuck it up, and you can't paraphrase them, because then just go, people go, oh yeah, yeah. And then it sounds like I've ruined your joke, so I tend not to remember them.
So have you got any bits over the years that have annoyed you that you haven't quite been able to get to work?
I don't have a lot of, I struggle with my confidence on things. So I kind of work to a formula a bit. If I try something, I have to try something three times, and then if I can't make it work, I just leave it.
Really?
And I don't, and then sometimes you'll have a bit where if the audience is really going with a routine, you can do the two or three tags onto it, and they'll go with it. And other times you think, I'm not going to. And you make that call right at the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
But for the most part, I tend to just cut those things out if they don't work. I'm trying to think of something. I mean, I've had loads of concepts that don't work.
Okay.
So like I did, so in 1999, I was on stage as the audience come in, and I was dressed like a puppet. I don't think the audience knew that I was dressed like a puppet. I was a pup, and I do a long, I do that monologue at the beginning of like, I was kind of taking the mick out of comedians at the time. That was right around the start of the honesty shows.
Right.
And cause I'd done a storytelling show. And I just thought it was really funny to do the coming out speech, where you have to tell the audience you're gay. I think it's more. Right. I think now the gay comedians don't even want to do that because it's not really. It shouldn't be that important. Mm. But at the time there was this honesty thing, and so I was doing the monologue, and I can't remember how it goes exactly, but it's like, you know, I've told my mom, and I've told my dad, and like, you know, it's been really difficult, and I had to move out, but it's my lifestyle, and I build up the big up, so I'm a puppet, right? And I guess the idea was, you know, it was just a bit too complex. The idea is that we're all puppets, really.
Yeah.
The man is the puppet master, you know, whatever. Yeah, but yeah. So it was the first time a puppet had done a human show. Lots of humans have done puppet shows throughout the centuries. So the first time a puppet did a human show, and it was I would go into characters. Mm. The puppet would become characters, like an old Scottish wood cleaner that killed people, and they're all the different characters. And then in between, the puppet would discuss human attributes. Like I had a crying scene where I admit to the audience I've never cried because I'm a puppet. And but because, you know, laughter is contagious, sneezing is contagious, coughing is contagious, maybe crying is contagious. So I got the audience to lean in and try and think of the worst thing that could, that's ever happened to them, to see if I can, if they cry, maybe I thought, if you guys can make yourself really upset and cry, I might be able to, it might help me. And one out of four times I would get, I would catch the audience to actually convince them to make it, try and do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Which becomes funny because they realize like about 30 seconds in that they're all trying to cry.
That's a great concept.
So it never worked.
Really?
Like it worked, like it did, it never, in the sense that I can cry on cue, like, you know, like it's one of those things I trained to do. You know, as an actor, it's easy. It's not a difficult, like you got to be able to do it.
Yeah.
It's really hard to do exactly on cue, but I thought that would be quite funny if I, and I would get to a point, I would get to a point with it where you could feel the atmosphere changing, where they weren't stopped. It's not that they weren't enjoying it. It's just that they all, like, I'd make eye contact with them and go, come on, let's really do this. And then they'd laugh at first. I'd go, no, come on, let's, I'm really serious. Let's try and, I really want to cry. And if you guys can help me cry, that would really make me feel more human. And then I'll get to a point, it would be just like on the, like maybe once or twice in that whole Edinburgh run where I actually was able to get to a point where I started crying and then they all laughed. But most of the time I had to pull the plug on it because it was, started to become uncomfortable.
Really? Mm. Wow. I'd love to have seen that. So the goal was, when you cry, did they then laugh?
Yeah. That's what I thought was going to happen. I'd cry and then they'd laugh hysterically and I would get upset.
But to me, that's like,
you know how I play with an audience and I get fake anger. I get angry with them for laughing, which makes them laugh more because it's just joke laughter. Yeah.
Because to me, that's like a no, almost with an Edinburgh show, it's like a no lose situation, because if they laugh, great. But if they don't, it's that poignant moment in a show where a puppet's, if they're buying into the fact that you're a puppet.
With me dressed with my little puppety hat and my lines drawn on my chin. Didn't do that well.
So did you do, within that show, did you do like just gags about being a puppet?
Yeah. I told a whole story about what my idea of God was. I had this whole image built up about God just being like all the gods were together, and our God is like of Zeus and you know all the Hindu gods. He's got the worst name, God. Like they just make fun of him, like, Dr. God. Like he's like he was named by primates, so God. You know, so this idea that he was already like a kind of aggro sort of at the end of the year God's party, he was the one that got drunk and told people to shut up, and then he had this party piece when he get really hammered. He was able to burst himself into billions and billions cut pieces of light and color. And then bring himself back together again, just, and it would really impress everyone, except for that last time he did it, and he couldn't get it back together again.
That's great.
And the puppet had this. That's not a comic routine, right? And it was never intended to be. It's supposed to be weird.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be this funny image. It's supposed to make fun of people that believe in gods. And it's supposed to say the universe is so vast that maybe that is, if you take all the pieces of it and put it together, that's what it'd be. I think it was just a bit too much for audiences at 9 o'clock at night at the old fringe. I probably could get away with it now at 2 o'clock in the afternoon in a nice little venue. Maybe that's what I should do. I should come back, do Phil Nichols' worst show ever.
That's a great. Would you consider that was your worst show?
Try and redo that show and see if I can make it work now.
It might be more Edinburgh now
with the skills I have. Yeah, it would be way more Edinburgh now.
Yeah,
people don't remember at the time. At that time, that was really unheard of.
Yeah,
doing like people doing character
99,
shows.
You said that was.
Yeah, I did 96, 97, 98. Did all characters. They did monologues, character monologues. The one in 98, I was...
Mike Gunn was telling me one you did about 20 characters.
Yeah, I did...
Schizophrenic.
Yeah, I did Phil Nichols' Schizo first. That was what... Like,
yeah, he was singing it praises about it. He said it was amazing.
Oh, right. And then I did a similar one the next year, but I had a really bad... My wife and I were breaking up and it was horrible. So I wrote that show. That's the one that people talk about. I wrote going up on the train. The people have this thing of this weird myth about me writing my Edinburgh award-winning show on the web on the train. That's not what happened. There are two stories mixed together. It was one in 1998. Yeah, I wrote on the way up in the train. But at the time, you could do that. Mm. You know, if you talk to any of the older guys, and you know, you would just go up to Edinburgh with an idea of shape of what you want to do.
There wasn't as much pressure.
There was no previews.
Yeah.
There was no preview season in London. That would be like, nah, just go up there and you do it there, yeah.
Wow.
And then 1999 was the doomed puppet show. I had blue hair. I dyed my hair
did
blue.
It go badly,
yeah.
Then?
I was with Off the Curb as well. They were not happy with me because they just wanted guys in suits slinging jokes, and I was like dressed as a puppet with blue hair. And I remember what's his name? He used to host the Buzzcocks. Mark Lamar. Mark Lamar, who's a friend of mine, Mark. I do like Mark a lot. But I had blue hair. And this is 1999. Pleasance Courtyard. Mark Lamar is at the height of his fame. And you know, it was his hair, his slick back hair, right? Which he obviously thought was pretty cool looking. And so we're in the Pleasance Courtyard. I'm standing beside Al Murray, and I think it might have been Sean Locke and Al Murray. And Mark Lamar comes out. He loved making fun of me for something. I don't know why. He picked on me a lot, right? I get picked on a lot. So he walked up as I'm talking to them, and he just went, what with your hair? Look at your hair. What the hell is wrong with your hair? And I just, the whole time, said, look him in the eyes. I just stared at his hair until he realized. And Al Murray and I was the only, because what am I going to say? Yeah, I've got blue hair. It's like making fun of someone going, look at your hair. I'm like, yeah, it's blue. I know, I'm the one that did it, idiot. Like, and you think yours looks cool. It's like Elvis. Anyway.
It's a bit like that joke you said that your mate does.
What's that?
The joke you said your mate does at the beginning of the podcast. When he said when someone like says something about someone.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, that's a good one.
That's really funny.
I don't know.
Phil Nicol! Woo-woo!
Yeah! Great stuff there.
Hey, he was so good. I think we should have Nicol back.
Yeah. Oh, you've been sitting on that one, haven't you?
I have.
That's a good one.
Thanks, mate.
Yeah. What did you think about the guy interviewing him? Unbelievable.
I was trying to think of another Nicol joke, but I don't understand American currency.
Oh, a Nicol.
Mm.
Is that like a penny, isn't it?
I think... No, a cent is a penny. It's not a half penny, is it? Christ, how old are you?
Well, I don't mean one of those, like, spikes.
What?
In a half penny, a bike?
No, it's a penny farthing.
What is it?
A penny farthing.
Just going out on a half penny.
See you later.
Oh my goodness.
A half penny is a unicycle version of a penny farthing.
Yeah, I know.
A half penny used to be a thing in the UK. It was called a halfpenny.
What?
Oh, right, in currency
pennies
about
and
now.
Yeah, yeah, right.
I wanted to go back to bed.
I think the listener wants to go back to bed.
Yeah, let's go back to bed, Joel.
Yeah, all right. Come on, Mark.
I hope you all enjoyed the episode. Any feedback at Jokes with Mark on social media. And I'll tell you what, if you thought, God, this is bloody good, Mark got up especially for us at half ten, let's leave him a 5-star review on iTunes. That would be bloody lovely. Mm. Go do that then. What's stopping you? Anything else, Joe?
Nothing from me, Mark. Can't remember it. Nothing from you, nothing from me.
What's anything from you, Joe?
Nothing from me. Anything from you, Mark?
Nothing from me. Like a wooga.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.